Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Glad to be back with you after a few weeks here. Sherry Coolidge, Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil and the Ones and Twos, and Sherry, it's good to see you. How are you?
It has been a little bit.
It's been a minute.
Our off times have not really coincided. And last week there was no podcast because why? As we sat down...
As we sat down, the microphones were turned on. Sherry gets a call on a breaking story about the Wendell Young.
I believe the exact thing, the text was, Wendell Young is in the courthouse. I was like, I gotta go. Wendell did plead guilty, plead no contest, and was found guilty to deleting the text related to the Gang of Five case that finally put that to rest. Dating back to 2018, he got a $100 fine, but you can look at that story online.
Yeah. Yes. Glad that that is now finally officially done, and everyone is moving on. And we're moving on as we talk a little politics here. And I should mention, before we jump into talking more politics, our special guest today is Cincinnati City Councilman Chris Seelbach.
Two-timer. He was on with Burl and I.
Two-timer. That's right. Oh, yeah. I was thinking, no, he's a three-timer. I thought you'd talk about council. Three-time elected, right?
Yes,
2011, mm-hmm. 13, and then 17.
Yep. But yes, so he was on. You were off, and we had him on with
His second
Editor
time.
Burl Love is the guest host. But you know what? He had a very stirring meeting yesterday, his last committee meeting. And just the equality index came out again, perfect score. We thought we'd kind of walk back over a decade. He's been on council, it seems like a second, but a decade. And so we'll walk through that with him.
And, with Councilman Seelbach, if I am correct here, he is the longest tenured council member going out with this group now, because wasn't Wendell appointed originally?
He was, but then he ran in 2011 too. So they're the same length of time. We did just have Wendell on his pod.
If you're looking
like you want to go back and like, what podcast should I listen to? The Wendell one, we did walk back through some things over this tenure, and Wendell was very candid. He talks a lot about the Gang of Five case and things that kind of came into play in this plea deal last week. And so he's a good podcast to go back and listen to.
Yeah. We're looking forward to having Councilman Seelbach here in a few minutes, just sort of ask him about what, looking back at 10 years, what he is most proud of in his accomplishment and what's next for him too. That's got to be a huge change to go from a decade in a really very intense role. You're in the spotlight constantly to now what is next. So we'll have him up here in a few minutes. And Sherry, but first, the show goes on with 2022 as we are now well into the 2022 election. Well, I guess you could say election cycle as we finish up the 2021 already. Here locally, some races are really heating up, and two in particular, state house races, both of which are on the east side. They border each other. I wrote about one of them, a Republican primary for Tom Brinkman's seat in what is the 27th House District. That's eastern suburbs of Hamilton County. Kurt Hartman, Joe Murray, Lindsey Cole. Could have more people jump into that. That's one to keep an eye on. And here now I'm newly known the race to replace Bridget Kelly in what is now going to be called the 26th House District. Not a big deal. They just changed the number. It's 31st.
She's term limited out, right?
She's not term limited. She's leaving. She's not leaving early. She will not run again because she's going to run to replace Dusty Rhodes as the county auditor. And so the race is on to fill her seat, and that's sort of a flip. It's more of a Democratic seat. So now we're going to have an intense Democratic primary as Colleen Reynolds, former city hall aide, to P.G. Sittenfeld, former Xavier University student body president, the current president of the Oakley Community Council, really someone who I think is really tailor-made to be in public service. And that's not an endorsement. I'm just saying I've known Colleen. We've known Colleen for a long time, and she's serious about policy, serious about working across the aisle. She is now jumping in to try to succeed Bridget Kelly.
And she's not the only one running, right?
She's not the only one running. Gavi Begtrip, who ran for mayor in the primary this year, has publicly announced that he's running. There are some talks of others. I haven't confirmed anyone else. I don't know if you have.
Donnie Isaacson.
He definitely is running.
I believe that he has a big announcement on Monday. I think this is what it is. He put out a press release.
Okay.
And, you know, he's a community activist, co-here. And when he says he has a big announcement, that's not a hard leap to make when you've heard all the rumors that he might run.
Gotcha.
Watch for some news from that with Scott Wortman. What have you heard about Julie Sellers? That's been a rumor.
I've heard that's a potential as well.
Those are big Democratic names and popular Democrats. So Gavi's a new name to this race. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, the Democrats decide to endorse. The Democratic Party here showed all that muscle in the city council race like we have never seen before. And I think they would typically stay out of something like this, but it'll be interesting to see if they decide to weigh in.
Yeah, so that is definitely a race to watch, as Bridget Kelly has endorsed Colleen Reynolds and has really, really worked hard to try to find someone to run to replace her. And so Bridget is behind Colleen Reynolds, and that's going to be an intense primary, and that is really the race, is the primary, because it's a Democrat, strong Democrat leaning seat. So already a couple of really intense races here coming up in 2022. We'll be all over those races and more across the region as folks start to, I think, you know, really lock in and figure out if they're going to run or jump in and run for races in 2022. As Sherry gives me the nod, I think that means it's time to jump over for our special guest. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and it's an honor and pleasure to welcome back to the podcast a two-time guest, Councilman Chris Seelbach.
Thanks for having
Councilman,
me.
Glad to be here. Thanks for coming on.
I do want to say, I feel like our former City Hall reporter, Jane Prendergast, and myself were just writing a story about yourself, P.G. Sittenfeld, and Yvette Simpson being these young, new, fresh council members. But was that a decade ago?
It was a decade ago.
Goodness gracious.
Wow. All right, go ahead, Jason.
Well, that was what my question right out of the gate was going to be. As your time winds down after a decade, you look back on this past decade, and what are you most proud of accomplishing during your time at City Hall?
You know, why I ran for city council was because we were losing population for 65 years. And as a result, with 10% of the population leaving every decade, that's 10% of people that didn't have jobs every decade. And that's why we had a deficit every year. And so the conversation was only about what are we going to cut? What are we going to not cut? And so I wanted to run to change that conversation to not what are we going to cut or not cut, but what can we invest in that will attract people back to our city, that will make people want to live in Cincinnati, young people. And I'm most proud that our 2020 census shows that we're gaining population for the first time in 65 years. Now,
it's awesome,
on a personal level, I'm a victim of conversion therapy. And so after Lila Alcorn took her own life in 2014, Cincinnati became the first city in the country to ban conversion therapy for young people. So personally, that means the most to me. But overall, I'm most proud that we're a growing city again.
Yeah.
Because, you are still going to live here, after you're on council. And I do feel like your body of work, I mean, obviously, I thought you were going to say that gay rights and how many strides that we have made on that in a decade. I mean, I can remember the moment where we first got our, you know, perfect score on the human rights index.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. Part of why we were losing population is because people didn't see us as an inclusive city in terms of race, in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity. So part of why we were a city that was losing population is that we weren't embracing diversity and equity. And so a big part of that is the sexual orientation part. We were known as the most anti-gay city in the country for a long, long time under Article 12. And so absolutely changing that perception by changing our laws was a big part of it.
When you started, did you feel like, could you imagine that we would be here at this moment now, a decade later?
No. I mean, you know, the council that that served before me was pretty moderate to slightly more conservative. And so I never imagined in 2011 that we would unseat four conservative Republicans and replace them with four progressive Democrats. Mark Mallory made a bet that if both Yvette and I were elected, he would sing in public for the first time. it was that unlikely. And so he sang happy birthday to the city the day after the election. But, you know, it was a huge upset in 2011, for sure.
That's and to say, to think that it wasn't that long ago that we were a city that was not LGBTQ friendly. It's just dumbfounding, and can you even go back to when you grew up in Louisville and you came to Xavier to Cincinnati, and that's how you came to Cincinnati was going to Xavier.
Right.
And do you remember that time? And even just sort of early on in your time here in Cincinnati, what that was like, and kind of helped lead you into ultimately running, jumping into politics.
Yeah, so I moved here in August of 1998 to go to Xavier. I didn't know a single person when I moved here. And as people probably know, I was estranged from my entire family for a decade. And that was part of the very beginning of that. So I was kind of really like alone. And, I found a lot of community at Xavier. Xavier has always been a very welcoming place. It has always been progressive and ahead of the curve. And, I found Father LaRocca was a professor there that I really connected with. And I found a community there. And that led me, 2001, to meet David Crowley. And that's kind of what changed my life. He was running for city council. And I found a guy who was kind of like a grandfather to me. He had four kids, and he always said, too gay, too straight. The gay son is an asshole, but he still loves him. And I just found a guy who was running for council for the right reasons. He wasn't trying to become president or governor or senator. He was just trying to serve his city. And, that's what led me to do what I'm doing today and is leading me out of elected politics. I truly had no intention of becoming governor or senator. So, it's an experience of a lifetime that's really anchored in kind of my relationship with David Crowley.
If David Crowley has since passed away, if he were here today, and as your time does wind down, what do you think he'd say to you?
I don't think I was running while David was still alive, and he recorded a campaign ad for me. But I don't think, and Sherry Crowley would disagree, I don't think David thought that I was going to win. And there were a lot of members of Team Crowley that considered running for council, and I think he thought they would probably run and win before me. But I know that he would be incredibly proud and excited, and he would have loved to be part of this journey with me. I can imagine calling David on almost every important decision and working it through with him. So he would have loved to have been a part of the last 10 years, I know.
And I think that he would look back at these last 10 years of getting to us to where we are. I mean, one of the new council committees, which you can look at on Cincinnati.com and who's going to chair them, is there's a true environmental committee coming next year.
Absolutely.
And it's the environmental, you know, initiatives other than the solar farm is really a big thing, I think, of this last administration. But in general, the idea, it's been an afterthought, I think, in a lot of things. We want to do it, but it was never a front and center. And I think that's getting a front and center moment coming up here. And I think that David Crowley would be like, it took a lot of work to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. The environment was his passion. He had a Prius before anyone, one of the first people to have a Prius. And that's really what he focused on in council, the environmental justice ordinance and other things. So you're absolutely right. He would be proud that we're bringing the environment and climate back front and center. So, you know, I think he would be surprised at what's happened in the last decade that Donald Trump was president.
Yes, that's true.
But no, I think he'd be very proud of our city.
When you look back, are there any moments, standout moments, like in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think that speech that I gave after Lila Alcorn died is, you know, one of the most powerful moments that I had because I felt, you know, my true passion, my true, what drives me the most is underserved kids. So kids who don't have a fair shot at achieving a good life, and that includes gay kids and animals. And so, you know, when I saw that someone in our own community had experienced conversion therapy, had been isolated by her parents and her church community, and felt that the only option was to walk in front of a semi on 75, you know, it really, really touched something deep, deep in me. And so, you know, the speech I gave trying to tell young people that, you know, it can get better. It doesn't always get better, but it usually eventually does. And so that was one of the most powerful moments for me, personally. And sorry, I have severe allergies. And so until about noon every day, I'm very stuffed up.
I don't know if the weather swings have anything to do with that. My allergies are terrible too. It's like, this is not working.
I take Zyrtec every day, but it takes a while to take effect.
Yeah, I was giving a speech to some home builders group. I don't know, it was maybe 2 or 3 months. It was late summer, maybe. Right. And something we were talking about council and the council race, and I forget how they were talking about who had a chance to win, and I said something. I think it was Betsy Sunderman. I thought because she stood for something. And I referenced you and I said, you know, you look at Chris Seelbach is when he first ran and every time you ran is that you stood for something and then you followed through on it. You had a few issues that you're very passionate about and you fulfilled your promises. People respect that. And I think that's why you've been there for 10 years. I think you look back and say, because of how, you know, the terms changed, really kind of twice now, is that you'll end up being one of the longest tenured council members ever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, David Crowley's logo or slogan, which I took over at Jerry Crowley's agreement, was the courage to do what's right. And I mean, that's really what I've walked in every day to City Hall thinking about. Like, even yesterday when we had a vote on the offices for the new council members, and the decision was whether to give all of the Democrats or who came in the top eight the best offices, or whether to listen to what the rule was that we passed in 2013, I think, which said that seniority goes to who's been on council longest. And, you know, my gut said, "Let you know, I'm going to help my fellow Democrats." But the courage, the thing to do what was right was to listen to what we passed in 2013, and that meant now I'm losing her name. Liz Keating had more time than some of the Democrats. So I've always tried to, regardless of how controversial or difficult or hard, to have the courage to follow my conviction. And that's, you know, led to some significant legislation that we've passed.
Yeah. Sherry?
So you came to council as a person living in Over the Rhine, you know, like buying your condo right after, you know, the riots, I believe.
Yes.
Talk about the differences that you have seen in your time on council and where you live. Because that has been a stunning decade for Over the Rhine.
Well, you know, I bought in August of 2004. My grandmother, I was still in law school, and my grandmother passed away, and I inherited $10,000. My parents, and so I decided to buy this condo in Over the Rhine. My parents said, you know, you're literally throwing your inheritance away. Like, you know, this, you're going to lose money. No one lives there. There's no bars or restaurants that anyone would want to go to. It was mostly a deserted ghost town. And this was one of the first buildings that was renovated. You know, it's pretty large for Over the Rhine. It's about 1,500 square feet. And I paid $125,000. And you know, it was just very deserted. My car had an old blue Jetta, and it was broken into like four or five times a year. I made sure I had glass coverage on my insurance. And I always felt very drawn to Over the Rhine. I'm proud of my German heritage. I grew up, my grandmother lived in Stitzelberg or Germantown in Louisville, and I was raised in kind of an authentic German culture. And I always felt drawn to Over the Rhine because that's who built Over the Rhine, were the German settlers who were forced out of downtown. And so I wanted to live here for that reason. And then, you know, slowly but surely, 3CDC started, and we started seeing more development here. And then restaurants, Senate, Lavamatic was the first restaurant, then Senate. And, you know, it started to become a thriving neighborhood. And now it's seen as like this, you know, you have to be wealthy to live here. I mean, it's insane how fast the change has come to Over the Rhine. And that's not true, by the way. There's a lot of affordable housing that we've preserved, and a lot of that's coming online. But, you know, it is incredibly unbelievable how fast we've taken a neighborhood that was one of the worst in the country, and now it's one of the most sought after. It's pretty remarkable.
Chris, what do you think the turning point, you know, was for Over the Rhine? Was it folks like yourself who were willing to take that chance even early on and buy a place, generally speaking, or was there a moment or a business or a decision that was made that you think really made it that kind of hard pivot?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the neighborhood has so much charm, and I think, you know, it has all of the good bones. It had all of the good bones to be as amazing as it is. You know, I think it took 3CDC. I think 3CDC has done a great job. I think maybe the turning point was Washington Park, which was a decade ago. You know, that was literally a homeless camp. And so spending $52 million to bring it back to this unbelievable life that it has. I mean, I think that kind of I see as a turning point.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's been many. Ziegler Park is another example. I mean, we're seeing such, you know, Pendleton now is becoming as lifelike as OTR. Bars and restaurants and new development. We're getting ready to bring several hundred apartments online on Sycamore. So, you know, I think the amenities that draw people to this neighborhood are what's changed. You know, having the great bars and restaurants and parks, that's really what's, I think, drawn people to the neighborhood.
Do you have an absolute favorite place that is number one on your list to go in OTR?
You know, I always say this, I think this is one of the most kind of unassuming restaurants, bars that there is, but we love to go to Shea, especially when it's cold out. It's very close to where we live, and they have unbelievable empanadas, and I think the best salad. They have a grilled romaine salad. I think it's the best in the city, and it's just a really warm, cozy place. The bar, the back of the restaurant is the bar, and it's just really kind of a cozy, fun place to go. So Shea is like our most unassuming bar or restaurant that we go to.
It also has a patio out back in the warmer weather. It reminds me of New Orleans.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It's a great, and it's not one of the top places that people think of. You know, it's not a Pepinoloris, it's not a Senate, but it's really a great restaurant.
What do you think about the new Central Parkway plan to turn it into like this grand boulevard? Do you think it's possible?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, so I have several thoughts. I think it's incredible, amazing. As you all know, I led the efforts to narrow Liberty Street, and we did a smaller version of what they're trying to do. So absolutely. I mean, pedestrian safety and affordable housing is what people talk about. When you talk to regular people in Cincinnati, those are the two things they care about. If they don't care about the streetcar, they don't care about zoning, they care about pedestrian safety and affordable housing. And this is absolutely a part of pedestrian safety. I mean, making it into a plaza where cars slow down, it's a fantastic idea. You know, I'm skeptical that this is being driven by FC to make their stadium and their experience better. But I will take an amazing street that helps make pedestrian safety better, even if it means helping billionaires become more wealthy. So, yeah, I think it's incredible. And I do think it's going to happen because FC is involved. And also,
and so is Mark Mallory, right?
And so is Mark Mallory, but he's also paid by FC. But yes, but because of the infrastructure money and because of the people who are involved, I do think it will happen. And I met with Chris Collinsworth and his wife. They have their building and their business is on Central Parkway as well. And, you know, they're fantastic people and they're part of the leadership of this. And yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I hope it will happen.
Has any of the new incoming council asked you for advice?
All of them have. And I just talked to Victoria Parks yesterday and she's taking my office and I don't know if I should say this, but she's going to become the next president pro tem. So, yes, I think all of them have asked for my advice, and I hope that they continue. I mean, there's really only two people who have been at City Hall in some way for almost 20 years, and that's John Cranley and me. And so, you know, I know how City Hall works and how it doesn't work and what's good and what's not good, which I think what's not good right now is a lot, because I think the city manager is acting more as the boss of city council, where it's the other way around. And so, yeah, all of them have reached out, but I've talked to some more than others. I saw AFTAB last night at the Light Up College Hill event. And yeah, I'm friendly with every single person coming online, including Liz Keating. So I hope to be a resource in the next 2 years.
Chris, how big of a deal was it that AFTAB brought Mark Mallory into the fold and having as part of his transition? I thought that really was a big move for AFTAB to do that. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Mark is a great guy. If you're a friend of Mark Mallory, he is a champion of you. And so I think it's a great thing. You know, my first 2 years were under Mark Mallory, and I mean, I can't tell you how amazing those first 2 years were. I had no idea how lucky I had it. Mark is just a really inclusive leader. He allows everyone to be heard and is respectful and is the team captain. He really is a great guy, and he was an amazing mayor. And, you know, that's what a mayor, I think, should be, which is kind of you are the captain of the team. But the team is your family. The team is who you take care of. The team is who you listen to and want to be successful. And I think that, you know, bringing him in and hopefully modeling that style will be very successful for AFTAB. And, you know, I think AFTAB is a great guy. And, you know, I worry that there are so many new people to City Hall that, you know, there could be some, you know, what worries me the most is that the current city manager has totally transformed City Hall into where council members cannot talk to other employees or directors, and has basically taken over as their boss. And that is not normal. And I worry that the new council, because they have so little experience at City Hall, will think that it's the new normal, that it's just how things have always worked. And it's not. It's absolutely not.
You're right. It's the other way around. You're the elected officials.
Job, yeah, I mean,
hired by the people.
What we do every day is someone calls and says my trash wasn't picked up, and so we spend 3 minutes calling public services and say, John Doe's trash wasn't picked up. Okay, we'll get someone out the next day. Literally, employees cannot talk to us. So if we call public services about someone's trash not getting picked up, they will ignore us because the city manager has said that everything has to go through her office. It's in a violation of the charter. The charter says that we have unqualified access to inquiry of all city employees and directors. So what that means is that we can't, you know, we can't tell them how to do their job. That is the city manager's role. But we can call and say, such and such trash wasn't picked up. Can you get it picked up? And so if I was still remaining on council, I would absolutely file a lawsuit against the city manager because her actions are a violation of the city charter.
Are you, and you know, as you said, you've talked with all the incoming council members, the incoming mayor. Will you be available to be an advisor to the new council, or do you just want to kind of get a break and get away from it after you leave office here at the end of the month?
No, I mean, I will answer anyone's phone call. As I've told Sherry, I'm definitely looking forward to taking a break. One of the things I'm most excited about is being able to block people on Twitter. Because right now I'm not allowed to block people on Twitter. Come January 4th, I will use that block button frequently. I just don't have to put up with the hate and the nonsense of anonymous people on Twitter anymore. So, yeah, I'm going to take advantage of that.
Jason and I understand.
So I'm looking forward to taking a break. Absolutely. I'm figuring out what I'm going to do next. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'm still searching. But I'm also going to enjoy the break of not having the stress of the everyday city council role.
Do you think you, and maybe it's too early to answer this, but maybe you'll come back to politics in some form or fashion someday?
That was a really fast answer.
No, I don't think that. My dad does. But no, I if there were something that I wanted to run for that I thought I could win and that I thought I would be good at, maybe, but I don't see that there would be. You know, I don't want to do this, you know, recycling of city council every 4 years. And, I have no interest of being county auditor or county treasurer. Like it just doesn't excite me. And also, you know, I would like to make more money. I mean, you know, we make a fine amount of money, but it's not, you know, great. And so, I've spent my 30s in public services. I want to spend my 40s and 50s, you know, making money for my family. So I don't see a return to politics, no.
Yeah.
I do have a really important question. Do you still have the seal float that you used in parades? And what will you do with it going forward?
Okay, so, you know, Craig, my husband, grew up on a horse farm in northern Kentucky that his mom still lives on. When they were growing up, it was a working farm. They had cattle and pigs and horses, everything. So there's two huge barns. And so the seal has retired to one of those barns. However, it has been exposed to the elements. So it is in as bad as condition as could possibly be. It would no longer be able to be used. If I ever made a comeback, we would have to recreate the seal.
Notice he's keeping it. Look at that. Is there something subliminal there?
We didn't, like, what do you do with it? I mean, would we burn it? I mean, I don't know what we would do with it, but it's no longer usable.
For folks who maybe aren't familiar with the seal float that you would have in the opening day parade and in other parades, what, obviously Seal Bach, your last name, but like, do you remember when the whole, like the idea of the seal float came about and what your reaction was to it?
Yeah, you know, Brewster Rhodes, who's always been a political operative in Cincinnati, I think he lives in Key West now, but he always, you know, and before I was on council, I was in politics. I ran campaigns. He was always challenging me to, you know, do something different, think outside of the box, you know, to turn your sign sideways or, you know, do something different that hasn't been done. And so, you know, knowing that we were going to be in lots of parades, you know, we thought of slogans like seal the deal or things like that. And so, you know, it just came to me that it would be fun to have a giant seal. And my friend Jake, my friend Jake Girth made it. We had a pizza party. We all paper mache'd it. And then Jake painted it. And so, it was just something different to do. And I do count it as, maybe there was 10 things that all came together and to allow me to win. I think the Enquirer endorsement in 2011 was one of them. But I think that the seal was something that stood out and that, people noticed and remembered. So, it was something different.
Sherry, you got another important question?
Well, no, because he's outgoing council member. It's even crazy to say that. And been a lot of looking forward this month. Is there one thing that you wanted to do that you weren't able to do?
Yeah, there's several. So one of the things that I've worked on the last several years just never came to fruition was kind of a worker bill of rights. And it was targeting people that work at chain stores, so Walmart, Target, Taco Bell, things like that. And it would require that they have ample timing to know their schedule, so a week in advance. It would require that they have at least 12 hours off between shifts. It would require that before the business hires new employees, that they give part-time employees more hours. So things like that. So yes, that was something that I worked on, and the product is there, but it never came to fruition. And there's also, in terms of animal rights, there's also two things that I wanted to do that also didn't make it. But one is to ban the declawing of cats, and also two, to ban the production of fur in the city of Cincinnati.
Oh, I forgot about that last one.
Yep.
Oh, you are a cat dad to three cats. I believe that's what Twitter is telling me.
There's three of them. Yes, they're insane. They're very big, much bigger than a normal cat. But Dottie and Jerry are our COVID cats. We got them in April 2020, and they're a huge part of our life. I'm petting Dottie right now.
And they're named after tell me.
Yeah. So Doe and Jerry are named after my grandparents. Doe essentially raised me. My mom was she worked, and so Doe was with me every day. And then Dottie, our cat that passed during COVID. Oh, there's Dottie talking right now. her name was Raya, but Craig called her daughter, and then eventually Dottie. So we named Dottie after her.
Chris, this has been great, and really appreciate you taking the time today to, as your time winds down. I believe next week is your official last council meeting.
It is.
Have you thought about what you're going to say in that meeting, or what it's going to be like for you?
I don't think I'm going to say anything. I think if you watched my committee yesterday, that was kind of my sign off. So we did the decade of LGBT success and went through all of the challenges, all of our successes, Jim Obergefell, all of it. And that was really kind of my goodbye to city council. So, it was in my own committee. I ended with my two favorite quotes, "It's supposed to be hard" and "Just dance." And that was kind of my sign off from city council.
I was off yesterday. I heard people were crying.
I think everyone in the room cried, and that's why I ended it. And I think this is the first time that's ever been happened, but I ended it by actually playing the song "Just Dance" by Lady Gaga at the very end. So we left dancing and having fun, but there were some tears shed.
If only you had Mayor Mallory there to sing it, too.
I know, right? That would have been amazing. Yeah, I mean, we've had some, one of my favorite moments as well is this past year when we put up the rainbow, inclusive rainbow flag in front of City Hall in June. Jessica Diamond, who's a local drag queen, it was like Tuesday at 10 a.m. and Jessica Diamond's out there performing in front of City Hall as we raised the inclusive pride flag. So, I've created some special first of its kind moments in Cincinnati.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. Well, thanks so much for joining us here today. And all the best to you as you move on in life after City Hall.
Yep, and good luck covering this new council. I think it's going to be a little less crazy, which will be great for our city, but maybe not great for you all. but yeah, it's going to be fun to watch what happens.
I do not want to leave this on a negative note, but I will believe that when I see it.
Thanks again to Councilman Seelbach for joining us here today. Delightful conversation. Sherry, any final thoughts on our chat?
I'm like looking at this new council, and then I keep thinking back to this last. I've been covering council since 2014, not quite at the beginning of this administration. I missed the big streetcar fight. But it has both been very quick and very long, and it's really crazy to think about. But then you look around downtown and you see the things that have happened and the changes, and you realize all the work. And also, if you put my name into the Inquirer archives, it's a crazy amount of things that happened, all those stories.
Yeah, it's like it really is. When you sit and think about it, the end of the end of an era with Wendell Young leaving, Chris Seelbach leaving, John Cranley leaving. Am I missing anyone? Christopher Smitherman leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, these folks have been ever present at City Hall, like for as long as anyone can be, because they changed over the terms. And so, like I said, Chris Seelbach and Wendell Young got a chance then. They got to go in and have essentially what was an extra term after the change was made from 2 year to 4 years. And now as they leave, we're going back to 2 year terms. So
yes, we are.
Anyway.
So speaking, we talked about downtown and some of the changes that Chris saw. I have not done all of the Christmas things, but I will tell you, I won't be home any night.
Is this our So Cincinnati moment?
Oh, yes,
of the week?
It is. Sorry. Our listeners knew where I was going with this.
Continue on, Sherry.
I haven't done the Christmas things yet, but 3CDC is doing this big thing again this year, Found Cincinnati, really encouraging people to get downtown. More important than ever, they say, after the pandemic, to help our restaurants. And the boutiques, independent shopping, these small businesses in Over the Rhine. They're such cute boutiques, if you haven't been down lately. So they are really, they're asking people, go to Fountain Square. There's bumper cars. If you can't ice skate, there's bumper cars in the ice rink now for a kind of different experience. The Christmas tree is lovely. I walked by it the other day. And so they just really, they're like, come, if you want to, really help your city, spend some of that money downtown to help out these businesses after the pandemic, because they need more than, this CARES Act money and the government support. They need the people. We want, and their point is, we need these things to continue to survive going forward, because we don't want to start again with fresh things.
That's great. I'm glad you brought that up, because encourage folks to get down, support restaurants, support small businesses.
Downtown Dazzle, I think, is back. There's something at the convention center, like this indoor lighted, in case if you're not a person who loves the cold like myself. Lumaz, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. That's at the convention center this year. That's new. And then, you can kind of go to dinner before or after.
Shout out to my favorites. What's your favorite downtown small business? Non-restaurant.
God, it's silence.
take a sec. I'll share mine.
Okay.
Love Cook Sporting Goods.
Oh.
I have always been a sporting goods store person. That I remember even going back to growing up, we would go to the Huntington Mall. And when I got old enough, I could go out and walk on my own or with a friend. If we took my cousin or a friend, my mom would go shopping at wherever, JCPenney. And I and my friend or cousin would walk around the mall, and our first stop was always Zide's Sporting Goods. I love sporting goods stores. It reminds me so much of that. But Cook Sporting Goods is like, it's like a true, real sporting goods store because they have a little bit of everything, not just sweatshirts and your favorite, but they also have, this is what makes them a true sporting goods store, is they have, they'll fit outfit teams with, you know, baseball teams with uniforms, equipment, football, youth football teams, that kind of thing. Love it. You go in there, they got all the retro jerseys hanging across the top ceiling. They have a really high ceiling and the walls are covered with just, it's just a great place just to even go and walk around and just look at stuff. That's a long way of saying I love Cook Sporting Goods.
I was just out
my
there.
My favorite small business.
When we went to the Notre Dame Bearcat game, we wanted all new gear, all new Bearcat gear, and like the line was to the back of the store. Of course, I waited to the last second.
And you can get custom made, like, and this again also what makes it a true sporting goods store is that you can get custom made shirts, things like printed on to a t-shirt or a jacket, sewn into, like if you want, you know, the logo of your high school team or, you know, your youth team or whatever, you can have them do that. They're custom for you. That's, you don't see very many stores like that anymore that do that, sporting goods.
All right, so I can't pick. My two favorite are...
Two's fine.
I love Idlewild Boutique.
Idlewild?
Mm-hmm. The Great Boutique. I think it's on Vine. but you can get really like good quality work clothes in there and have a really good shopping experience, and they will help and they will not let you leave in something that doesn't look good. Like there was great customer service in there and quality things. But I also love Down to Mars Vintage. Their accessories, that she does a great job in there of, you know, you can just really mix up your wardrobe. And so
where's that
my things are, it's more in downtown proper.
Like downtown OTR?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's on.
Downtown OTR. Yes. Yeah, the sort of the urban core.
So I would say those are my two favorites.
Love it.
They're both related to fashion and shopping. No surprise. Even though I don't talk about that a lot on this podcast, if I had like a personal podcast, it would probably be about fashion.
Yeah. No surprise for you. No surprise for me that mine's sporting goods. So are we done here? Or do we want to keep going? Just,
you know, we're good. You know why? I have to go cover council and park board at the same time.
Fun,
wish me luck.
Fun. Sounds great. Catch us on Cincinnati.com in the Inquirer, and we will catch you next week.